afternoon. Welcome in. WEEI Afternoons. Christian Arcan, Andy Hart, you at 617-779-7937. Nice to have you with us here today on a pretty nice day here in the Commonwealth. 65 degrees and sunny. Hope you enjoyed the Aurora Borealis last night. I couldn't see it. Did you see it?
No, I didn't. I didn't
see squat.
I didn't either. And I saw all these people taking pictures with it in the background and everything. And I feel like I told you the other day I don't really have FOMO.
Yeah.
I got a little FOMO right
now.
Got
a little Aurora Borealis FOMO.
Yeah.
I live in the sticks, right? So I figured I'd definitely be able to see this. Well, you live in the city, you know, there's all the city lights and the pollution.
When was
and all
it?
That crap. It was 7:50 last night. I don't know. It was right after we got back.
So I was like driving home.
Yeah. And I remember there was a nice, I was driving along to get back towards Dedham. And I remember driving along the Charles River. It was a nice sunset. And I thought, oh, that's nice. But when I get home, I'll certainly be able to see these northern lights here. I got home, I didn't see a damn thing.
So I may have seen a portion of it because there was definitely a nice, like, pink sky at night, sailor's delight kind
right.
of sunset. Was that potentially blending with the Aurora Borealis or whatever the hell it is?
I have no idea. All I know is I didn't
any cool picture. I know it's not on my IG or anything right now.
I looked out the front of my house, the back of my eye, I did not see anything. I saw nothing out there, so there you go. But it's a big day today. We are just 48 hours away from May Day. You know it's serious because Andy Hart is not wearing a visor today, so you know that this is a very serious program.
And I got orange.
Here. And you got the orange on as well.
You will never get more energy than the Friday before Drake May's debut, and I got orange on. Because I'm like Tiger in red. Orange is my color. I feel energy. It, like, oozes through my veins when I wear orange. So I am ready to carry your ass if you're a little tired.
I am a little tired.
Okay.
My son kept me up very, very late last night, but that's neither here nor there. We were all waiting. We were all very disappointed by the lack of northern lights out in the backyard. But
oh,
May Day.
According to Twitch, sorry, but
what?
Answering our questions, according to Christy0902, you can really only see it if you take a picture. It's better in pictures than it is in real life.
Oh,
yeah,
true?
You can't see it with the naked eye, really.
Oh, then no wonder I didn't see it. I didn't take any damn pictures.
I didn't even know what I was looking for. Yeah, how was I supposed to know that? All right, fine. So all those people who took pictures were just pointing their camera at the sky and taking a picture and hoping it would look cool. None of them could actually see that. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, pretty much for the most part. And it's funny because I just found this out within the past, I don't know, 1 to 3 years. And I, too, thought it was just something that you could see with the naked eye. But no, it's not. You need a certain lens on
what
your camera.
What a scam. It's like looking at an eclipse with the stupid glasses. Like, I don't care. Whatever. Fine. Northern lights. If you look in a camera and take a picture, don't care about it anymore. Didn't really care about it that much. I had FOMO, but now I don't care at all. You couldn't even see it. You had to take a picture, then look at the picture.
Now
that
we have
sucks.
Reports in the Twitch chat.
I don't know.
Now Radio Chick 81 has chimed in that this was a very strong one and you could see it with the naked eye.
Well, I couldn't see anything, so it doesn't matter.
Faint with the naked eye.
Anyway.
Jesus H.
The day is going to arrive. We are, the Aurora Borealis or not, we're going to be seeing Drake May on Sunday. We're all going to be seeing that in the northern skies or wherever we're looking. And what we want to open up with here today at 617-779-7937 is the expectations versus the reality, because I think everybody has very high expectations at this point. And if you don't have high expectations, you're at least energized by the idea that this could be an improvement, that this could be something that turns the season around even. I think that there's been talk of that out there. You're 1-4. It's still early enough that you could make something out of this season if Drake May plays well enough. Is that an expectation that people have out there? And what's the reality of what he's walking into, what he's going to be surrounded by, what he is as a player and a quarterback at this stage in his career, which I think is an important part of this that people are really overlooking. I think anyone who's talking about Drake May is either saying, yep, he's going to go in there and he's going to be better than Jacoby Brissett. And because he'll be better than Brissett, this team's going to be better. He's going to elevate everyone. And this is going to be a much more watchable product. Right? That's the optimist that's
yeah.
what you've been hearing.
And
for the negative Nancys, and as some, I think the truth
he's
may be,
break.
He'll break. He's got nothing around him. The offensive line's going to be letting people through. The receivers can't catch. They can't separate. They can't do this. They can't do that. He's not ready. There's been some of that, too. He's not ready. The reason they haven't put him out there yet is because he hasn't been picking up the offense. There's things he's still learning. He's still a very raw talent. So, you know, he might not have all the abilities and instincts ready to go out there and play quarterback in the NFL yet. And I think that's one, when I hear all the pessimists, and I'm not one of these pessimists. I wanted him to play, and I was maybe pessimistic about drafting him in the first place. But now that he's here, I want him to play. The idea that they kept him off the field for over a month because of him and not because of the team is something that I feel like gets brushed aside by everybody. Well, no, 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 that's not it. It's not because of him. He's good. It's that the O-line's not good enough. It's that the receivers aren't good enough. It's that, you know, they have to lean on the running game so much, and Alex Van Pelt doesn't call a good game yet, and you just don't want to put him out there because it's not going to work. And I think that the people who say you can't put him out there yet because he's not ready to play in the NFL, that's the one. Because we don't know. I mean, we think he's ready. We saw him in the preseason. We don't know, actually, if he can go out there and start and play a full game yet against starters and everything. It's just we haven't seen it. But that's the great unknown. What little we know about Drake Maye so far, we know from practice reps. We know from preseason. We know from garbage time against the Jets. That's it. I don't know if that paints a clear enough picture for people to really come into this with their eyes wide open and truly believing that, yeah, I know that this is going to go well.
No, you can't possibly.
You don't know that, right? We don't know that.
I'll give you an example. I watched a football game on Sunday at Gillette Stadium where I don't think either quarterback looked like they should have been on the field, that they were prepared to make plays and do the job. So I think NFL coaches, hey, Tim Boyle was on the field. Skylar Thompson. I don't think Mike McDaniel, who's a genius offensive mind, always knows that the quarterback he puts out there is capable and ready to do the job, right? He's gone multiple weeks in a row where I think he's fielded quarterbacks that weren't really ready to do the job. So nobody can possibly know for sure, but you have a hope, you have an expectation, you have a projection. Certainly we know the skills, we know little seeds of potential fruit growing that we saw in the summer. And I will say right off the bat, I don't know if it's propaganda or honesty, but the fact that Jerod Mayo is like, the energy around here is better, resurgent energy. And I believe it because I expected it, because I think that's what happens when you put in a new quarterback. Automatically, people are like, huh? Forget about what they've seen on the practice field. Forget about what they believe Drake Maye is. A new quarterback is always an opportunity, right? Whether it's Tom Brady for Drew Bledsoe, whether it is Andy Dalton for Bryce Young, whoever it is. Now, some of them bomb.
Right.
And some of them, you got to go a different direction relatively quickly. And I don't know if that would be back to Jacoby Brissett or Joe Milton. We're not going to have that discussion because it's Friday before Drake Maye's debut. So this is all positivity. This is all dreams and expectations. This, you bought your lottery ticket and you're going to sit down at 1 o'clock on Sunday and you're going to watch those damn numbers be called, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that what this is?
Sure.
We're all thinking in our minds about what we're going to spend the $1 billion on, the $888 million on. And then they get two numbers in and you're like, okay, guess I'm not going to have $888 million.
Back to the drawing board, unfortunately.
Right. And that could come on Sunday. And that's where I think we are, because there's hopes. What do I hope for? I hope he goes, you know, upside numbers, 20 of 30 with 260 yards passing, two touchdowns, one interception, and a rushing touchdown. That's what I hope for, because I don't think it's crazy. Obviously, your biggest hope is like Kirk Cousins, 520 yards. And
right.
Let's not be stupid. What do you hope for? Now, do I expect that he's going to go 20-something for 30 with two touchdowns, one rushing, and only one pick? No, I don't think it's probably going to go that well. I think that's overly optimistic. But the fact that the energy is up, I think, helps his cause. The fact that I feel like teammates may be more invested. Like, Jerod is talking about people coming back to the huddle.
Mm-hmm.
Who comes back to the huddle from the furthest distance with the best opportunity to show a bounce in their step?
What? who comes back to the huddle?
Who comes back to
with
the
a
huddle
bounce in their step?
From the furthest distance with the most opportunity to show a bounce in their step?
Wide receiver who just ran down the field?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? Like, Mike Onwenu, when the play is over, is really only like 6 yards from the huddle.
Yeah.
I don't know that he's going to have a massive bounce in his step. You know who might? Hunter Henry, Pop Douglas, Jalen Polk.
Yeah,
those
like
guys.
That. Yeah.
So to me, when he says there's an extra bounce in their step, I read the receivers who are rejuvenated and are like, we can do something. We can actually go out there and look like NFL talent on a football field on Sunday. So I think they are hopeful. Now, they don't know either, because I think I had a dream last night, by the way.
You think you had a dream?
No, I'm pretty sure I had a dream.
Okay.
There was definitely, right before I woke up to pee.
A Drake Maye dream?
Yep, absolutely. And it was tight.
Was he dressed like Little Bo Peep?
No, it was just on the field, and it was like one of those tight edits where it was a highlight of Drake Maye throwing, and then it was a highlight in the back of the end zone, a crossing receiver, and there was a Texan just all over the receiver.
Yeah.
Might have been Polk, and the ball just like the Texan's hands are there, and the ball goes just over the Texan's hand into Polk's hands. I definitely had that dream, and then I woke up to pee.
Weird. Drake Maye is Vegas has him an over under. You want to know what his over under for yards is?
Sure.
165.5.
Oh, that'd be a new season high for the Patriots, correct?
C.J. Stroud's over-under is 235.5. Now, when it comes to passing touchdowns, May's over-under for one touchdown, one half touchdown, over a half, minus 128, under a half, minus 102. So they think he's going to have at least one touchdown pass in this game.
So do I.
Or they think that's what's going to get the most action, and yeah. I think that that's probably a smart way of doing it. 165 is low, and I think that speaks to not what they think of Drake May, but what they think about the rest of the team, right? This is a team that offensively has been, in the passing game anyway, abysmal. I mean, it's been an unwatchable mess watching this team try and move the ball through the air down the field over the last 5 weeks. And the quarterback's the most important part of that, but the passing game, as everybody knows, is a multifaceted thing with a lot of different moving parts, and none of the parts have been particularly strong. And that's not going to change, I don't think, out of the blue. It may be that some of these elements of it, and I'm talking mostly about the skill position players here, were in a position where they weren't being seen when they were open. They weren't being seen out of cuts. They may have had a step, but the window wasn't big enough for Jacoby Brissett to feel comfortable trying to get him the ball, which we talked about yesterday. Brissett wasn't about to go make mistakes, and I know he did make some, but that wasn't his MO. He wasn't trying to go deep down the field. He wasn't trying to fit the ball into small windows. He did throw a pick six to Fred Warner, and that was a bad play, but I don't think that that's, you know, indicative of the way that he quarterbacked the team for the first 5 weeks. It was very conservative. It was very kind of, I'll just take the sack, or I'll, you know, run around and just and spike it or whatever. But there wasn't a whole lot of shots. You're going to see shots. You're going to see Drake May taking shots, I think, this week. And you should, because that's what he is. That's what he has been billed as. He's a guy who can be a home run hitter. He can throw on the move. He's got a big arm, and he can hit guys deep down the field. And they haven't had that. And these wide receivers who are out there running these routes in an offense that I don't think is particularly complicated, right? I mean, we both sort of agree that Alex Van Pelt hasn't really put together a McVay, Shanahan, McDaniel kind of offense. This is pretty simple.
Mm-hmm.
And even with that, it's just been so hard for them to do anything, to be productive in any kind of way. The smallest amount of production, I think, is, you're right, going to absolutely energize that room, and we'll see how good they can actually be. Here's the thing. Even if they're all energized, even if they're all pumped up and they're all feeling themselves, they might still go out there and get shut down by Houston, because Houston's a strong defense, and I still think, even with all the confidence in the world, this isn't a good group of wide receivers. That's not going to change.
So let me ask you a question. You know I love the more likely, the polarizing sort of extreme ends.
Sure.
So in my opinion, that you could potentially have an oh my God game on either end of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, he's a disaster. This offense stinks.
Yep.
He threw three picks, and this is, people were right, he's not ready. Dan Orlovsky, take your victory lap on Monday. Or he could be the oh my God, he threw three touchdowns and no interceptions. He's knocking on the door of 300 yards, and the Patriots just upset this blitzing pressure defense from Houston. He was the better young quarterback on the field, and he was on the field with C.J. Stroud. Which of those oh my God scenarios is more likely?
You're not going to like this, but I think the first one.
Oh, you're terrible.
I think the first one.
Why?
Because Houston's defense is so good, and they just shut down Josh Allen.
Poppycock.
That's why. Did they not shut down Josh Allen? I'm sorry. Did I miss something?
Shut him down.
Last week, did they not
for a while,
body
he
slam
came
him
back
through the ground? Did they not hold him to like 9 of 30 passing or whatever ridiculous numbers that was? I know in the second half, they ran off a couple of points. That was mostly because Buffalo turned them over. And I think that's one way that maybe the Patriots can hang in this game, is if the defense is able to turn over C.J. Stroud, who had a fumble lost and a pick last week. And by the way, hasn't been having a great year. C.J. Stroud so far this year has been kind of underwhelming after his big rookie season. So I do think that the Texans are kind of vulnerable there. No Nico Collins, maybe not Joe Mixon, we'll see. But that was the reason why Buffalo was able to get back into that game. For the rest of the game, that Houston defense throttled Buffalo. And we've called Buffalo the best team in the AFC at certain points this year. We're not calling them that now, because they're, what, 3-3? I mean, they've fallen off pretty hard here lately. But watching that performance against a tough Buffalo team and a tough quarterback doesn't have me leaning towards, oh yeah, I think Drake May is going to go out there and have the best game of his life. If it's going to be one or the other, I'm going to go with the first one.
Okay, this may surprise you. I'm going with oh my God, good.
Okay.
Because I'm choosing to believe the energy that Hunter Henry answered the question with Jones and Keefe earlier this week about, oh, he's a great player. I'm choosing to believe Mike Pellegrino and Marcus Jones and Drew Wilkins and all these guys that are talking about the practice field. Alex Van Pelt, 6 for 6. 6 for 6 on blitz calls. Nailed the hell out of that test. He's ready to play. He's and you know what
was
I
it
think?
With virtual reality or was it actually on the field with real players coming at him?
I'm hoping it was on the field with real players.
We don't know that, though, do we?
And I am choosing to think that the Texans might be a little bit under-motivated. Maybe they're taking this a little less serious than they should. Mm-hmm. Coming off a big game against the Bills. They've gotten off to a nice start to the season here. And maybe they're like, ah, rookie quarterback, their line stinks, we'll get after him. Well, guess what? The line was better last week. The line is healthy.
I agree.
The line should be better this week. And if you give Drake May a little time to cook, he's going to cook. So give me the, oh my God, good performance. And everybody at around 4 o'clock Sunday afternoon will be joining the Six Rings postgame show with Fitzy and Hart, where Fitzy won't be the biggest homer on the program.
Now that's
Hart will be celebrating the Drake May debut victory.
I'll believe that when I see it. Even if you do go in there guns blazing homer wise, just imagine what Fitzy's going to be if Drake May goes out there and has a great game. A couple more props here for you. Completions. Over-under on completions on FanDuel for Drake May is 17.5 with the under. The under getting the minus 130 over 17.5 at plus 100 if you're looking for something juicy there, Mr. Optimist. And for attempts, over-under 28.5. So they're saying it's going to be right around 17 for 28 with a touchdown, 165-something yards. And I know that's not what they're actually saying. That's what they're trying to get
right.
action with. But let's just take that and say that that's his day. 17 or 18 for 29, 166 yards, one touchdown. Are you celebrating that?
Not as much as I'm celebrating my, oh my God, three touchdown performance.
Well, obviously nothing's going to top that, but I'm saying if that's what you get.
If that's the real in the middle,
I'll take that.
I will absolutely take that. Yeah. Against the Texans, in what people say is kind of a bad spot, you kind of screwed up, you should have deployed him last week and blah, blah, blah. If that's the performance, first of all, that's a better performance than Jacoby Brissett.
Than he's had all year. I think that's probably true.
Right?
Yeah, let me go back and look at his numbers, but I think that's probably true.
I'll take that in his first ever taste of NFL action against a blitzing, aggressive, pressure defense in the pass rush. Absolutely. I will take that. I will celebrate that and say if that's step one and you're expecting him to grow, like we've seen the other rookie quarterbacks grow, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams,
yep.
Bo Nix are all growing. They're getting better. They're learning. I will absolutely take that because he'll get better. And the competition might get worse, and you combine those, and all of a sudden you get a nice big boy quarterback fun
the
story.
The closest that Brissett came to those numbers I just gave you was against San Francisco. He was 19 of 32, 168 yards, a touchdown, and an interception. By the way, Drake May for interceptions on FanDuel. Will he throw one? Yes or no? Yes is minus 146. No is at plus 112. So they're expecting a pick in there, too.
Yeah, I kind of
so that's
too.
Pretty similar to what we're looking at right now. Like 19 to 32, 168 yards, a touchdown and a pick is basically what Brissett did against the San Francisco 49ers. And we all thought that kind of sucked, didn't we?
For Jacoby Brissett, the pro-ready gives us the best chance to win veteran who should know better and do better and be better. All of that. Who's
right.
Played in Alex Van Pelt's offense and all those things. This is the green, young, number 3 overall pick, who's raw, his footwork's terrible, and Dan Orlovsky will tell anybody who'll listen that this is such a catastrophic mistake, and it's like abuse of their quarterback and all that, that he puts up those numbers the same as the veteran. I'll take that as a nice starting point, and probably a realistic starting point.
Realistic, right? Yes, because it's his first game.
Yeah.
And these other rookie quarterbacks you see out there performing well right now didn't have great debut games. None of them did. Daniels didn't, Williams didn't, Nix didn't, the other two haven't played, so like, you know, it takes a while to build up to what they're at right now through a month and a half or whatever. And I think that's part of the reason why people like me are frustrated that May didn't start the year. He should be well along at that point, especially for someone who's considered a more raw product that's got to be molded and, you know, formed into this good passer. So that's another thing we'll keep an eye on for sure as we watch these other quarterbacks and see how they look. You just said that Dan Orlovsky is one of the many people in the chorus saying that this was a bad idea and that starting May will be a disaster. Mike Lombardi already said that as well on the podcast with Bill Belichick over at Underdog, I believe. Was that podcast? Or am I mixing up the podcast?
Yeah, the Underdog one Patricia Lombardi Belichick.
Yes, he's got all these podcasts now,
yes.
So it's hard to keep track of them.
Which
was
probably more entertaining than the Let's Go one that I listened to that almost drove me off the road.
Oh, yes, with all the old guys.
Let's go
just
to sleep,
bunch
they
of old
call
guys
it.
All talking about how cool it is to be old. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. We'll get to your phone calls, and we'll hear that Mike Lombardi sound in just a minute, and we'll discuss what's going to happen here if the optimists are right or if the doubters are right. That's all coming up right after Stiz tells you what's trending. Mike Lombardi, not on the Underdog Podcast. That was with the Pat McAfee Show 2 days ago. And he's a doubter, maybe even a little bit of a hater. He's doubting that this is going to work out or that this is the right time to do it. And I do think there's a distinction to be made between people who think that Drake May is going to fail because of the team around him and the way the plan got sort of deviated from, and people who think that they botched the plan. People like Giardi, who we talked to a couple days ago, who wants May to play but doesn't like the way the plan played out. And I understand that because I'm not really sure that there was ever a steadfast plan. I think that this plan was, it was, to quote a great man, the concept of a plan. You know, it wasn't really a plan. It was basically like, we want him to sit on the bench as long as possible. We want Brissett to go out there and play. We want him to learn by watching, not by playing. And then eventually we'll be able to sort of let him out and let him go. They didn't expect that it would be this early. They didn't expect that they would have to make this decision this quickly. And I think that they're panicking a little bit. I think that's all fair. That doesn't mean you don't want him to play. It doesn't mean that you think he should sit again. The reason why they're panicking is because it looks so bad and because it's just a ridiculous offense that you're watching. So now you have to really break it down between the people who are being overly optimistic and the people who are being overly pessimistic. And let's talk about what happens if either side is right. If the optimistic side is right and he goes out there and he kills it, we all know what's going to happen there, right? I mean, it's pretty obvious. He's going to be the starter. He'll be the starter for the rest of the year. You'll have something at quarterback. Gerard Mayo will be validated. Alex Van Pelt will be validated. Those guys won't have to worry about losing their jobs anymore. The offense is going to be talked about differently. You're going to get this whole thing about how the offensive line actually wasn't that bad in the first month and that they just needed someone who could deliver the ball. Same with the wide receivers. It's not like they stink. They just needed someone who could get the ball and put it in the windows for them to catch it and all that. And I think that's all going to be just natural stuff that happens when you make a change and it goes well. If it goes poorly and the doubters are all right, then things are going to be interesting. Like, it's going to be fun, obviously, if he's good. But if he's bad, that's when you're going to see blame getting shifted. That's when you're going to see guys on the hot seat. That's when you're going to see offensive line questions that continue, wide receivers, the opposite of basically everything I just said. And I'm kind of afraid of that. Like, I'm much more afraid of that outcome and how that's all going to go, because I just don't think that this team and this group organizationally is equipped to take on a big blame pie thing. You know, like, well, it's your fault the kid failed. That's your fault. They weren't prepared for that with Mac Jones, and that was with Bill Belichick, who'd been the best coach in the league for 20 years.
Yep.
So I don't think Gerard Mayo and Elliott Wolf and Alex Van Pelt and the rest of them are going to be able to handle it if this doesn't work. And that's scary to me, because this has already been kind of a tough season for people like us. You know, like, we're sitting here trying to talk about this team. If the quarterback comes in and he's not good, and after all this waiting for this guy, for this savior to come in, and all of a sudden we realize, oh, no, this isn't any better. In fact, it may be worse, and now all of a sudden your meal ticket out of being a sucky team and covering a sucky team, for that matter, is maybe put on hold for another couple of years. Like, that's scary. I find that very scary.
The funny reality is, I think either of our polls we talked about, the oh my God games, will result in criticism.
Yeah.
Because I think if he's really good, you're going to get criticized for waiting until this point to actually put him out there. You wasted the first five games of the season.
Right.
And if he's really bad, it's going to be, you guys panicked and put him out there when he still wasn't ready. You reacted to pressures outside the building. And you're right. The only person in my mind who has even close to enough cachet to deal with the train wreck version that you're describing is Robert Kraft, and he's had a tough run over the last year.
He's not
plus.
Good with the whole blame pie thing either.
Just,
that wasn't me.
And nobody else has...
Make a documentary about Gerard Mayo screwing up Drake May.
Nobody else has anything to lean on.
Right.
Whether it's Wolf, Mayo, Van Pelt, any of them, and that could get really ugly. That could get dysfunctional franchise, like, tear it down ugly just, you know, a half a season into their tenure here. Because even Jonathan Kraft, I would put in there, isn't necessarily the face and the guy ready to deal with those types of things publicly. He hasn't really done it. It's been Robert and Bill forever, right? Bill most of the time, and then Robert swoops in occasionally at a Super Bowl or an NFL meeting.
Yep.
Now,
or Robin Glazer smashes a bunch of tapes.
Right, but that's behind the scenes.
Something else.
Because I don't think they want Robin Glazer out there talking either. Mm-mm. So there's nobody really equipped to deal with train wreck chaos. And if we get train wreck chaos, I think my thing will become even more true. Losing is undefeated.
Yep, 100%.
It will crush them.
So what do you think it's going to be there? 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Let's go ahead and start with your phone calls here. We'll do this diplomatically. Who's been waiting the longest? It looks like Ray in Boston. Go ahead, Ray.
All right, boys. So, I got to be honest with you. I'm backing on this Patriots team. We got an awesome quarterback. He's got wheels. Yeah. He's got a huge body. He's got arm talent. I'll pump for football again. And listen, this guy's not doesn't have a little pea shooter. He was a top pick for a reason. He is a good football player. We got a good football player who's going to come play good football for our team. So let's be positive. Let's watch and have a reason to watch.
All right, thanks
That's
for the call, Ray.
That's a great call, Ray.
Thanks for the call, Ray.
These are my people.
When he said he doesn't have a little P, I was like, uh-oh.
Shooter.
P
He's talking about his arm.
I know.
He's talking about his arm. And he doesn't. He can sling it in
really
my
hoping,
dreams.
I was really hoping the second syllable of that wasn't going to be something else. But yes.
So was Stiz.
Yes, we all were. I think this is very reasonable. He's a good player. He was a good player in college. He's a top prospect. This is all true. All of that's true. And I think that there's no reason to think that he'll go out there and be totally overwhelmed. We haven't seen him go out and be overwhelmed at all at any point. Even in that joint practice with the Eagles, like he was getting sacked a lot. But did he look overwhelmed? Like, I don't think anyone said that. No one reported that. And in the times we saw him out there in the preseason against the Jets and everything, he didn't look perfect every time, but he didn't look like the moment was too big for him or the lights were too bright or that he was going to wilt under the pressure or any of that stuff. He's ready to play, I think. He's ready to go out and play.
I think he's ready to go out and play. My biggest concern right now, in a weird way, is has nothing to do with Drake May or the offensive line or the wide receivers. It's the third straight day that Ramondre Stevenson was not on the practice field
right,
with the media out there, and Jerod Mayo openly acknowledging, we got to talk about who we're going to bump up from the practice squad, which made me go look, because I was like, wait, I thought it was my guy Kevin Harris. Apparently the other option is, I'm not familiar with this young man, Terrell Jennings.
Not familiar with him either.
He's number 29 on your roster. He's a rookie from Florida A&M. He played 44 games at Florida A&M with 281 rushing attempts for 1,800 yards, 24 touchdowns, 6 foot, 217-pounder. But if that guy's activated and it's Antonio Gibson and Jermichael Hasty and him, I don't want to be disrespectful to those guys, but certainly the job just got tougher for Drake May.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Now you might have to sling it 30-something times.
Right. And even if Stevenson was playing, I'm not convinced that that game was this big redemption game for him. Like, he still, to me, I think has a lot to prove this year. Like, that
yeah, but
was,
he ran well.
It was a good game, and he did run well. That's true. But I'm not ready to be like, oh, yeah, Stevenson's back, and he's going to be a 1,000-yard guy this year. Like, I'm not there with him yet. I think he makes the running game better, but not like, okay, May doesn't have to do anything now because he got Ramondre Stevenson.
Much better chance that May has a 100-yard rushing attack to work with if Stevenson is in the rotation than if he's not in the rotation.
That's true.
If he's not in the rotation, I'm not saying they can't, because I actually think Antonio Gibson has been pretty good for the whole, the number of reps we've seen, the role he's been in variously, whether it's starter, fill-in, change of pace. But if you don't have Ramondre Stevenson, because I'm looking for it, I said, you know, I want 25 and 25, 28 and 20. I want to be relatively balanced out there until and if the game gets out of hand.
Yeah, 617-779-7937. Coach up in New Hampshire. Go ahead, Coach.
Yes, I know a lot of you have said, like, what's the plan and I don't know, you know, what are the specifics? I really think the plan all along was to play Jacoby Brissett, and if the team was winning and fairly competitive, we may not have seen May, maybe even this season. And that also built into that plan was if we become unwatchable offensively, then we just got to play Drake May. And I think that's exactly how it's played out. My second point, and the reason why I called, is what am I missing? I've coached receivers a long time. I see Kayshon Booty block with integrity downfield. We saw it last week. Contest for footballs with good, strong hands. Go up and high point the ball. What is it that I don't see? I'm very curious because I really like the kid.
Kayshon, but thanks for the call, Coach. Kayshon Booty, I think the best play he's made was when he jumped up for that screen in the backfield. Remember that in the preseason? And he, like, had to do this. He had to jump, like, way up one hand.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It was from Brissett. I think it was, there may have been from May. I can't remember exactly.
I do remember that.
That was Kayshon Booty. It might have been the peak of his career so far. You know, he's a good downfield blocker. I'll agree with that. I've seen him down there making some plays blocking. But as far as high pointing the ball and doing all that other stuff, like, how do you know? Like,
well,
how could you know that?
He was overrated hype-wise when he arrived. Because everybody said, oh, he had 300 yards as a freshman at LSU.
Right.
And, like, his career kind of petered out. His career did not blow up like you would have thought from that performance. Last year, I think he dealt with immaturity, adjustments to being kind of professional. I think there were issues there. I don't think he was in great shape. I think there was a lot. Now, I thought he had a pretty good summer. I thought he had a pretty good summer on the practice field. And I think we talked about it. It almost felt like Baker became the young, immature, needs development, and Booty maybe slid up a roster spot into a more mature second-year role. And I do think he's going to get his opportunities because with this group, no one has taken the bull by the horns. I have no idea who you're 1, 2, 3. He's going to get chances, but I also don't think he's this great prospect where you're like, oh, my God, he's been such a disappointment. He was a sixth-round pick, right?
Like, yeah. And he fell to sixth for a reason. Yeah. He had that whole gambling thing. Like, you know, like
there's a lot there.
Questions there, and he hasn't exactly answered them with great aplomb, I'd say, so far. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We'll continue with your Patriots phone calls and the Bruins with an ugly win last night at TD Garden in their home opener. We'll get to that next. He sure did. Bruins improved to 1-1 on the season with a 6-4 win over the Montreal Canadiens. And as you just heard there from Judd Surratt, indeed, the fourth line shining in this one as Kostelec had the goal, 2 goals as a matter of fact. Koepke with a couple of assists. And Jeremy Swayman, the Bulldog, as he was so dubbed by a one Miss Celine Dion last year in the locker room, which I totally forgot about that until he just said it, had a not great game. I don't want to say it was a very good one. I don't think that he looked particularly awesome out there. 20 saves on 24 shots and a couple of early ones there. They got the first one off the power play, which, you know, you give a little break there. That second one, the Caulfield goal, where he was just standing there untouched behind the net, just poking at it.
Yep.
Like that, I mean, Swayman's got to get over there, obviously, but can anyone mark the guy? Can anyone push him out of the way? Can anyone stop him from insisting on scoring that goal? And then in the second period, I thought Swayman settled down a little bit, lost the plot a little bit there in the third as things got a little dicey, and then Kostelec with the second goal of the night that put that one out of reach with about 4 minutes left to go in the game. What were your overall thoughts on that one? Another one where there's two goals on the board before you made it home.
Yeah, that was my first takeaway, is what the hell's going on here? That's what they do. I don't know that it was the dramatic, hopeful reset that I was looking for when we were down at scores yesterday. You got the win. That's good. I thought there were portions you played well. I thought they controlled the puck early. Then they had that one goal waved off for goalie interference. So I thought that was a little misleading. I thought they actually played better early than the scoreboard indicated. I think I love that Lindholm's involved first two games. I think you're already getting return on investment from Lindholm. I don't love the defense. You've played two goalies and you've given up 10 goals in two games. Like, you're giving up 5 goals a game. What you think of all those and how involved the goalies are, I guess that's probably debatable. But I would say we talked about it yesterday. What's supposed to be the strength of this team, or one of the strengths of this team, is the defense core. And I don't think they've been great.
No.
You can't argue they've been great. It's not what I think. They aren't.
Andrew Peak last night? I mean, every single time he touched the puck, I felt like he turned it over.
Yep.
Carlo was not great about that either. Both of them had, I feel like, at least a handful of giveaways each. I didn't think that McAvoy was as questionable as he was in the first game. And Zadorov, I thought, had a nice game as well. But in the offensive zone, too. And McAvoy, again, with another goal. So I think that, you know, you're starting to see him take a little bit more aggressive actions there, getting into the offensive zone and getting shots up, which we had a caller yesterday talk about, and I agree, is a good thing for this offense, especially when they're struggling. Other than that, Elias Lindholm with his first goal. Pastrnak had a goal. And it's a Montreal Canadiens team that I don't think is very good. On the second night of a back-to-back, you're supposed to beat this team.
Yep, and you did.
I would have liked to have, you know, seen maybe a little bit more on from the defense and from the goalie.
Okay, so let's just flip sides, though. A couple nights earlier, a 5-1 game became a 6-4 game.
Right.
Here, a 5-2 game became a 6-4 game.
Yep.
Do we treat them the same way?
No,
because we said the Bruins didn't really come back. It was kind of garbage time.
This wasn't garbage time, though.
Okay. No, I know. I just want to.
It was 5-2 after two, and then when they scored the two goals, there was still like 5 minutes left.
No, I know.
With one goal, you know, like that still to me was a game that was not in garbage time yet.
Yeah, and I didn't. Swayman, I said all summer when I was talking about May, like he was fine. Mm-hmm. Some days he'd be fine plus, like a little bit better. I thought Swayman was kind of fine. You know, I'm not really surprised coming off of a lack of practice. Well, yeah, two practices, like the whole contract situation. He was trying to be feisty. He had that was at the end of the second period where he was kind of going at it.
Yeah.
And like,
Florida, they were down 6-2 in the third.
Yeah.
Right? With like 5 minutes to go or 3 minutes to go, and then they scored the two goals. So that's different from what we saw last night.
I just want to make sure we're consistent.
Absolutely.
You know, with garbage time and kind of evaluating it. But no, I think Swayman, It was fine. That's a building block. It's probably like get a win, get in front of the home crowd. You were talking about this. I didn't get a chance to see it. You felt like there was a rounding ovation for Swayman.
There was when he first got introduced.
So no ill will with the fan base.
Doesn't seem like it at all. And that's interesting to me too. And also, you know, you hear from people, callers, people on Twitter, stuff like that. The people who are going to the games still, Bruins fans going to those games, they can be critical fans. But they're gonna back their guy. You know,
they're gonna
back their guy 100%. That's the truth. Same thing with Tuukka. Even as frustrated as people got with Tuukka Rask, you walk into that building and you would think Tuukka Rask hung the moon, you know? Like that's just the way it goes. It's gonna be like that with Swayman too.
And wouldn't you want them to be like the guy just signed an 8-year contract.
Absolutely.
You wanna boo him? You wanna like, you know, add some sort of salt to the wound of the relationship?
You don't have to boo him, but it was a big ovation. Like
you
it
should
was
want
the,
to
it was
though,
the biggest
he's your
ovation.
Guy. Embrace yeah. him. Like
absolutely.
Until he gives you like tangible reasons to not be happy with him. Like, and I was as critical of him as anybody, but now he's your goalie for the next 8 years. He's the guy that's going to decide in many ways mm-hmm. how good your franchise is for nearly a decade, right? So you should be wanting to cheer him on, wanting to support that, like giving the benefit of the doubt of optimism to him and then take it from here. And that game last night I thought was a benefit of the doubt first game. If he plays like that in 3 weeks, then I think people are going to be like, what the hell happened? Like, you know, how much damage was done with
right.
you in the holdout or whatever. So it was fine.
Yeah, it was fine. It's a good way of putting it. They are back in action again tomorrow night at home against the LA Kings. They will take on the Florida Panthers again on Monday at TD Garden. And it's a day game on Monday.
Yes.
So there you go. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We'll continue with your Patriots-related phone calls. Tim is in Hanover. Go ahead, Tim.
Good afternoon, Christian and Andy.
Hello, Tim.
What's up?
Christian, I want to say, man, you couldn't have put that pregame scenario any better for Sunday.
Okay.
And I do want to say, Andy, on your end, I do want Drake May to do well. I've been one of those nervous Nelly guys, and I hate to be. I've never been negative in my life. But the thing, it's been a mess. I just want May to have a great game, do well, and then I want one thing out of the Pats. I want the scouts to start scouting all those guys on the team and make them a better team and give them X's or check them so we can do the rebuilding process that we need to do and start it like right now.
Yeah, I'm sort of with you. I think this rebuild now, the second rebuild, it's rebuild number two, really, if we're keeping it funky here since Brady left.
Yep.
This one needs to get moving here before it gets so stuck in the mud. And I think that's part of the reason why you go with May at this point. You don't want the offense to just be so dysfunctional, so stuck in the mud that no one can come in and fix it. Like there's still a chance to salvage it. And I think people look at that not just for the offense, but for the whole season. Like there's still something here you can salvage, maybe. And Drake May is the guy, the only one, as we've pointed out over and over again, the only real improvement that you have sitting on that bench.
Can we put a pin in that? I actually like that idea for a segment. That was sort of like, you know, those lasers that, you know, in a factory do quality control. And like if there's a bruised apple, it like shoots it out the side and the good apples keep going and then they get to your grocery store. I think quality.
I don't know what that is, but it sounds cool. Yeah.
You don't watch a lot of like food shows and stuff like that?
Not with lasers shooting apples.
Yeah, they have all these lasers and like there's usually a puff of air. And if like a bad piece of fruit or a bad piece of candy comes through, it like poofs it off into like the garbage because it's not up to standards to be sent to the consumer.
Okay.
I think that would be an interesting thing to do with this roster.
Okay.
And, like, guys that we think are here for the next X number of years, foreseeable mm-hmm. future, are part of the turnaround or part of what you hope this team's going to be in a year or two, and guys that are really just filling out roster spots for this year and whatever, maybe competing for camp body status. Because
yeah.
I think they're not all 53 that are here even close to are guys that you want for the future if you get to where you want to be, competing for wild card, competing for the division.
I agree.
That's a good idea by the caller.
That is a good idea. And I think on offense in particular, you got yourself a real youth movement going on. I mean, there's young players all up and down that offense. You drafted all offense in the draft, basically, and you have some other guys there still in their early, you know, mid-20s that may or may not be part of the team going forward. So, yeah, it's a good question. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. The Patriots, in case you didn't know, are playing the Houston Texans on Sunday, a Houston Texans team that drafted a young quarterback, inexperienced, the second overall pick, turned things around immediately, and are now one of the most feared teams in the AFC. Gerard Mayo talked about the Texans and how much he looks up to them. We'll talk about how the Patriots can be like the Texans next.